Pod.
Rugby pod.
Hello and welcome along to the Rugby Pod, brought to you as usual by our good friends at Guinness. A big thanks to Guinness and all their support throughout the whole season. We're back, but we're not quite back in the same way as usual. Not in studio together, but Jim and Goody are with us via the wonders of video calling. So talk us through, lads. Where are you and what's going on? Goody.
I'm in my office. You can see my dartboard behind. Working from home in the FX job. So I got my desk set up and I need to get a bigger bin, really, because it's tough. Working from home, you know, you've got your laptop, you're trying to do a few jobs, and you obviously need some pick-me-ups throughout the day, don't you? Bit of chocolate here or there. The odd Coke Zero Cherry, there's the odd can of Guinness, there's the odd Twirl Bar, Star Bar, you know, any Cadbury's chocolate, really, and the missus keeps finding all the wrappers in the bin, so she just looks at me and says, what are you doing? You can't go to the gym. I celebrated when Boris closed the gyms, so I've been out walking, playing with the kids in the garden, playing a bit of golf, but I'd stay in contact with my good friend James Hamilton every day, don't I, Jim? And, you know, my life is seemingly a lot better than Jim's at the minute, eh, Jim?
Yes, it is. And the contrast, you're sat in your games room. I'm actually sat in a store cupboard. Do you want to see? Shall I show you what it looks like?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, please.
There you go. I am absolutely hating life. I don't normally work from home. So I normally work remotely for Rugby Pass. That's my main job. And I just go out. So I've had to jiggle things around. We're in self-isolation because Freya, one of the twins, was showing symptoms on Sunday. We went by the government rules, and rules is rules, as the famous Michael Holford said. She had a high temperature, coughing, slightly laboured breathing, and who knows? I don't even know. I just know that every morning I'm waking up thinking, have I got a sore throat? The more I read and the more that I see on TV, the sore in my throat gets and the more out of breath I get. But the poor missus is trying to do the kids schooling and stuff like that. You got the twins screaming. I'm still working from home from the store cupboard, and it is absolute bedlam. So it could be a lot worse. There's people in a lot worse position, and there's going to be people in worse positions once the lockdown comes down and Boris throws that down, because I think it's horrible. I think that you're being advised to do something and they're not doing it. There's a big difference between being advised and being told, though. That's a big thing. But look, we've taken the safety approach. Beck's mum's, you know, had a long-standing illness, and Max, one of the twins, had a respiratory issue because they were premature. As I say, Freya had symptoms. So, hey, lock it down. Why not?
My only question on that, Jim, is why is the missus the only one teaching the kids? Why aren't you teaching the kids?
I'm forest school, mate. I'm outdoors, so I'm taking them outdoors.
Man.
Yeah, I am. I am wild man. And we're trying to find a bit of balance because, you know, it's different for all of us. It's a big adjustment. And touch wood at the minute, we're all healthy-ish. You know, the twins have been a bit poorly, but hopefully we'll get through it. And it is weird times. My mates are losing their jobs left, right and centre. You know, clearly we've cut back on a bit of work, Goody, from the commentary, the games. I can't see the season starting again, to be honest with you. I mean, it might start in the summer, they might shorten it, but it doesn't seem like things are getting any better. And the thing is as well, that's annoying, like, genuinely, if I watch too much of the news, like, I genuinely start to feel down and depressed. So I'm trying not to watch that and trying to look at things a little bit differently.
You've been getting the kids out. You've got some new rules for the kids as well when you're taking them out biking, aren't you?
Well, I said, mate, it's like Paddy McGuinness said, no likey, no lighty. So there's no run, there's no iPad. So that's it. It's as simple as that. So cycling, trying to get them out, mate. Exercise is key, as we know. And it's interesting. Look, I'm not trying to sound old school and sound like I do know what I'm talking about, but you look back in history, when there's wars on, and we're lucky that we don't have to go to war, and our kids probably won't have to go to war, but they did in World War One and World War Two, and people were queuing at the armies, at the navies, at the RAF doors to go to war. Here, we're being asked to bloody stay at home, and people can't do it. I think there's a big issue in our kind of culture and society that I find quite frustrating, really.
Yeah, it is. I completely agree with you. It is ridiculous what some people are up to, and, you know, people do need to get a grip of what's reality, what is being asked of us. And, you know, you're hearing stories of, you know, there's an NHS hour for our medics to go shopping. There's an elderly hour as well. And you're just hearing people people are just going and ransacking Tesco's and other supermarkets that aren't in the NHS. Have a word with yourselves. It's ridiculous. Yeah, we've seen all the videos on social media. And social media is a good thing, but it can also be a bad thing and spreading a bit of fear. And, you know, we don't know how bad it is out there with people not doing what Boris Johnson's asked them to do. But, you know, we can just follow the guidelines and hopefully things will improve.
That's
just
the thing. I was going to say, Andy Rowe, not to cut you off, but every single person is affected some way. So whether that is through losing their job, having their salary cut, their assets, you know, so if you're doing well, your assets are down. If you've got shares and stocks and shares, then they're down as well. You know, everyone is affected here. It isn't just me and Goody or, you know, Andy Rowe or producer Tim, who I can see lovely on the screen. Look, you look very nice. Look very nice with a kid. And there's the worry as well. You know, I've got a couple of mates who've got kids on the way as well, and they've got to go to hospital. You know, they're looking at home births, the stress around that, you know, the mental well-being. You know, there's an element of the novelty for me being at home for 7 days has probably worn off a little bit. It's lovely. You know, we joke about it, spending time with the family, but you know, I'm a creature that likes to work. I like, you know, getting out there, speaking to people and doing my job. I love my job. And I can't do my job properly at the minute. And the uncertainty as well that I think it's never happened. Never felt like this before. You've had decisions to make along the way, but I think it's the uncertainty for everyone that you're like, what the fuck's going on? Like, what's going to happen? When's it going to end? But then I try and put it into perspective that people are dying. And you're seeing the images which aren't made up. It's not fake news. And it's harrowing. And I just feel lucky that, again, I'm here with the family, and hopefully we're, you know, touch wood, that we're all going to be okay, and everyone will get through it. Like, once we get through it, we'll look back on it and we'll be at, like, actually, I think we'll all be better people for it.
Yeah, it's certainly a very serious time for everyone. No one's really not affected, but you know, there's a lot of doom and gloom out there. And just to sort of lighten the mood a little bit, have you guys got any sort of advice for parents out there that have got a house full of kids that are running around creating mayhem?
Well, luckily we've still got the nanny coming, which Jim hates me for, but our nanny is, and I know her son listens to this out in America, so I won't name her, but she is an absolute superstar. So as much as we joke about stuff, it's tough trying to find things to do. Everything's closed for kids, isn't it? So we bought a load of stuff for the garden. And the only thing that made me feel better about myself on Saturday, I messaged Jim and said I just spent $2,500 in the back garden building a trampoline. Jim's response was it took him and Beck 5 hours, so... It's tough, isn't it? It's
well, basically Goody said he was putting up the trampoline, Pablo was putting it up, and he was holding the tools.
I was just telling him what to do. I think
it's a case of just trying to not think too far ahead. It's day to day, and you've got to try and get in a routine, and that's the most difficult thing, because most of our routines, or everyone's routines now, is completely different to probably how it's ever been. So, you know, it's a change of mindset. You know, I've you know, the first five days I was sweet, I was like loving it, I was thinking, right, you know, but I've had a couple of moments where I'm like, fucking hell, like struggling, because every day is different with kids. That's the thing. And I've got four kids and all different personalities. If one's feeling off, you know, is Max teething? Is Freya better? You know, the temperature's high. And then you have all that anxiety that goes on with it as a parent. But exercise, you know, and it's easy for me to say that because we can do that here. But I think at any chance that you can get, if you can get outside, you know, 2K run, that's, you know, I took JJ and Phoebe around the corner for a 2K run, and JJ was in front of me, and I was absolutely hammering Phoebe towards the end. And
JJ the star though, eh? JJ number one.
Exactly. You can hear him now. What time is it? We're about to head into terror hour. So we're recording the podcast at 10 to 5. This is where it gets difficult now, 5 o'clock. So I'm sat here for as long as I possibly can in the store cupboard, surrounded by shoes. Oh, there's a pair of pants, the umbrella. What else can I see? Some Das Booty Scootons. I've got my medal over there, Saracens Player of the Season. That was voted for by the supporters. I've got a maraca as well.
Maybe you should open the door and show us a little bit of your parenting skills, Jim.
Really? Shut that up!
There's been a bit of footage floating around of some of your old games, guys, isn't there? Been replayed with the lack of rugby on TV and on social media. You guys have got a bit more. It's like reliving the old days, isn't it?
It is. And it's just amazing to see. I've said this a few times on here. I look back at my career now, and the further I get into retirement, the more I think I was just shit. And then actually some video clips come back up and I go, oh, actually, I wasn't too bad. And the opposite is the scenario with Big James Hamilton. Because the more he gets into retirement, the better he becomes. Like, he's saying top 10 second rows in the world, you know, an absolute Scottish legend. And then you watch some of the clips, and I skinned him. Worcester against Gloucester, absolutely rinsed him. And then he gifts us a penalty, which I duly slot over with my eyes closed. It should have won us the game. And then...
And you didn't win.
No, we didn't win because JP Doyle gave a dodgy penalty away at scrum time. I mean, tell the scrum that back then. The ball was out and he gives a penalty 3 seconds later. I mean, come on.
It was nice to see. Andy Goode said he skinned me. I actually sent him on the outside. He got absolutely minced by Akapusi and Guerra.
Akapusi and Guerra. Wow.
Oh, my word. Absolutely minced.
That's a red card now. Swinging arm across the head.
Well, he listened to his skipper, mate. Make sure you mince that guy with a funny air at the back. Minced him, knock on, and you didn't see it because it was off screen, but I'm about 50 metres. Me and Johnny May are racing for the ball, mate. He's got the elephant man running after him. So it's good.
Yeah, well, despite the lack of rugby that's been going on at the moment, there has been a bit of news coming out of rugby with the majority of premiership clubs asking some of their players to take 25% pay cuts. What have you guys made of that?
Well, I got wind of it last week. I think there was also a part of me that kind of thought that it might be inevitable. It's really difficult, isn't it? You know, not just rugby, but everything. I mentioned some of my mates. So you think of these rugby teams that are living hand to mouth. Yeah, make sure I get that order right. Hand to mouth. They can't afford it. So even to deduct 25% or even 50%, we're hearing some clubs have put out there, that's still going to cripple these clubs. Now, there's the argument, and we can talk about that as well, as if, say, you know, Mauro Toji gets deducted 25% of his salary compared to, I don't know, a Freddie Clark at Gloucester, just throwing a name out there that comes to mind, like, a lad that's coming through the Premiership, a bench player, you know, it's going to be Freddie Clark or a player in that kind of bracket that's going to feel the pinch as opposed to Mauro, but you live within your means. So there needs to be something fair across that. And I'm saying Gloucester and Saracens because they're the teams that have come out and said that they're deducting 25%. I don't think it's feasible for them to not deduct their salaries. They're not taking in any income whatsoever. There's nothing on the gate. There's no TV revenue, which a lot of these teams obviously rely on. So your BT Sports would pay Prem Rugby, and then, you know, the money coming in from Prem Rugby as well.
Well, I actually think on that, there's aspersions been made about that. I'm not sure whether BT... I think BT are actually still paying at the minute, but there are discussions there. So rugby clubs are businesses, and ultimately, all the clubs need to look at that. But you also understand how tough it is for the players. But the players obviously want the clubs to be still in the game when this coronavirus is hopefully done and dusted, because you could see jobs going. You could see clubs folding. And again, it goes back to the wages. The wages, and we've said it on this podcast quite a few times now, the wages over the last 3 or 4 years have doubled and gone through the roof, but revenue of clubs hasn't. So ultimately, clubs are losing more money and becoming less and less sustainable. So it's tough on the players, of course it is, but it may be a reality check for where the game's at and the clubs to sit down and say, actually, and I'm not going to bring it back to the Saracens issue, but other clubs are competing with what Saracens have been paying players and setting the market at. And that's clearly something that with this coronavirus, all the clubs are going, actually, we haven't got any revenue. There are question marks whether we're getting all the money from BT Sport. BT Sport obviously got to look at their profitability as well. Then people are sort of saying, where's all the CVC money gone? Each club, what have you done with that? So there's loads of things going into the melting pot, but it is a tough time for everyone, and clubs, players, the decision makers in the game. Actually, legally, the players don't have to take a pay cut as it stands. And I know the RPA are doing a load of work within that to try and work out what is best. We've seen some players like Jack Noel come out and say he's happy to take a 25% pay cut. But like Jim said, Jack Noel's in a very different bracket to other players, where 25% of a lot of money, which Jack Noel will be on, and of course, he deserves that, wouldn't perhaps pinch him as much as a lesser player. And that's where perhaps things need to be looked at.
I think it's right to put it out there as well that it isn't just the players, it's the coaches as well. And it's a lot of other people in the organisation. I don't know how every club works, but I know Gloucester, for example, I think he's across the board. And across the board, I mean everyone in management. Leicester's exactly the same. I don't know whether that means people who work at the stadium. And we all know about the hospitality industry. I mean, that's probably going to be the most affected out of everyone. I imagine that was one of the first things to go. So it isn't just the players that are being asked to take a salary deduction. It is the coaches as well.
Looking at some of the top clubs, do you see any of them in particular that could fold?
Imagine if you're Saracens, right? And you've gone through this year that you've gone through, and they weren't a club that made money anyway. Nigel Ray, there must be a part of him and the Ray family that thinks, fuck it, I'm throwing in the towel. There must be. I mean, it's gone from bad to worse. Forget what's happened on the pitch in terms and off the pitch in terms of the salary cap. I'm talking money. How much money has one man got to be able to keep paying and to keep losing? It's ridiculous. I spoke to Billy Vunipola today for the show that I'm doing for Rugby Pass called The Lockdown. Get it? I think that he's going to stick on and show that loyalty. But I'm just thinking, a club with the players that they've got and the fine that they've got to pay this season, I think of Sarries, I think of Wasps. We've joked about it, but I think it is out there in the public domain, Goody, that yes, the Andy Goose suite is full to the brim and the food is very nice. I mean, you need a chainsaw to cut the steak, but that was about it. And the fish from the Coventry Canal as well tasted a bit salty, but of course it's the Coventry Canal. But you look at a team like Wasps, who is out there in the public domain, that they are struggling for finance. What the hell are they going to do? I don't understand what they're going to do. So even if they deduct 25%, even if they deduct 50% of the salary, where's the money coming from?
Yeah, I think, well, the issues are, it's the same for every club, isn't it? There's, I think it was reported last year that there was 50 million collectively lost by the Premiership clubs, you know, some obviously more than others. Some books were looking slightly different than perhaps the actual outcomes of what they should have looked like. But, you know, take Wasps then. We spoke about Wasps. Derek Richardson, the owner, he's pumped a lot of money into that club. He's pumped his heart, his soul, you know, everything into it to move it up to Coventry. A lot of fans would just be saying, well, you know, Derek surely, you know, just needs to fund the difference. But ultimately, that's his pot of money that he's earned over his lifetime. He was very successful in business with insurance. Now, you know, we've all got savings, or some people haven't got savings. But, you know, what percentage of that would you be happy to give? So it's the same for every owner. And this is what I always think is interesting. If you own a rugby club, or generally most sports clubs, and you think you're going to get a profit out of it, deluded is probably the wrong word, but you're doing it as a passion. So ultimately, with owning a sports club, comes a financial burden, which you go in knowing about. But when we are at a stage where we are now, where, you know, these clubs are losing money, and all of them except for Exeter declared a loss last year, and Exeter's it's openly out there that SW Comms is owned by Tony Rowan, it's the main sponsor. So, you know, you do question whether that was actually a profit or it was just extra sponsorship. But hey, when you're looking at that, fans will just say, oh, surely the owner should just put his hand in his pocket and pay for it. And it's not as simple as that. For some owners, I'm sure it will be. For some owners, they'll say, listen, yeah, and I'm not just talking about rugby, I'm talking across other sports. They'll say, I'll fund the gap, but how long do you fund that gap for? You know, if this goes on for a year, you've got to have cost-cutting measures. You know, we've seen across the board, every company is going to be affected. So rugby's no different. And ultimately, people will say it sits with the owner, but it's a hard, hard conversation to have with employees, with you know, fans as well around the game, because it's all a passion. But what we don't want to see is whenever this ends, which we hope it will end at some point, you want still there to be 13 professional Premiership rugby clubs, Newcastle being the 13th, obviously, that are in the mix. And obviously, there's the issue now in the Championship with who comes up, because as we've seen, Ealing Trailfinders have come out and said they might take legal action if, you know, they just automatically promote Newcastle. So there's loads of questions and not very many answers. But in terms of the money side, every club is in the same pool of uncertainty, I'm afraid.
I kind of felt like the comments from Ealing were a little bit premature and maybe like bad timing on their behalf. What did you guys make of the war of words between them and Newcastle?
Well, I think timing might be the issue. they've got a point. I mean, it depends how close they are to making the decision on next season. Look, there's no doubt about it. Newcastle are top of the league. They've not lost a game. They've beaten Ealing Trailblazers away from home with a bonus point. Ealing didn't pick up a bonus point. Newcastle are going to go up. That's the point. But what Ealing's point will be, and all the hearsay around Ealing, is that they've invested in the squad, their facilities. You know, they are serious about being promoted, and they're going to obviously not get that opportunity because their league's been canned now. So there's a part of that where if you've got the money and you can take it to court, then they might do that. But oh my word, you talk about timing. But like, again, just to reiterate my point, they might know already that they might have already been told that Newcastle are going up, and that's how the league stands. So, you know, I guess there are bigger things going on in the world, but we're here to talk about ruggers. Newcastle are always going to come up, isn't they? And Dino's come out. And once Dino comes out, mate, you don't say a word.
But Jim's right. You know, Newcastle are 18 points clear. I know Ealing Trailfinders have got a game in hand, but they're 18 points clear. They've played 15, they've won 15. And I think Ealing Trailfinders were sort of saying they've got Leeds as their game in hand, which will probably be a guaranteed five-pointer because Leeds are bottom of the log. But it's crazy. Timing's bad. And the other thing with Ealing is I actually don't think that their ground, as it stands, would pass the test of being viable to play in the Premiership. So it's the timing terrific. Whether they are going to go ahead with it or whether it's just hearsay or a throwaway comment by Ben Ward to say they'll take counsel on it is, and it's been blown out of proportion, I don't know. But it's clear and obvious that with the RFU cancelling the rest of the sort of leagues, they'll go through a process, and a fair process, you'd hope, around sorting out promotion and relegation. And anyone in their right mind who's looking at that and looking at that league going Newcastle 15 from 15, 18 points clear, even though they've played a game extra, who's going to say Ealing are going to come up, except for, you know, someone that's part of that Ealing club that thinks that there's a chance when in reality there probably isn't.
And Jim, you had quite a bit to do with Dino when you were a young fella, didn't you?
Mate, I did. Mate, Dino was my head coach. He was the guy that brought me through to be the man that I am now, sat in the store cupboard at home. I hate my life. Beck, I'm leaving you. She might think I will, because I can do what I want. I can't really. She's the boss.
I love the way you whisper it, Jim. You whisper
it. I know. Well, wait till she hears the next segment, the social media one, Peelback. She's going to be like, what have you just said? Anyway, yeah, so Dino was both mine and Goody's head coach, actually. But for me, if anyone talks about influences in your career, there's a few. I had Tom Smith, who was in the academy at Leicester, who was one. And Dino was another one for me, as well as Dusty Hare and Cockers and stuff like that I mentioned before. But for me, Dino, I loved him. I had loads of respect for him as a coach. And for whatever reason, he liked me. So when he sent me to South Africa, and I think I spoke about that story last week where I had a fight with my best mate Deeks when we were out there, and I took one of the Deacon bombs and didn't flinch. So when I came back from South Africa, I got a job offer, another club, Rugby Lions. The mighty Rugby Lions had come in for me, and they'd offered me an upgrade. So at that time, I was on $2,500 a year from Leicester, and I was an apprentice. So I worked in a stats company. I also worked at a building site, David Wilson Homes, doing the. I was a labourer at first, but then I was doing the ceilings. Like I'd put my head, so I'd stand on these kind of planks with my head on top of the, underneath the plasterboard. I'd drill up onto the roof. So I had a really good job at David Wilson Homes. Then I go to Leicester, $2,500 a year. Anyway, so I was going to go to Rugby Lions. Got offered a big deal there to go. I think it was $10,000 a year plus a car, and it was a Ford Escort and a flat. So I'm off. I've gone into the office, said, Dino, just to let you know, mate, I'm off. I'm leaving. He's like, well, where are you going? We've just sent you to South Africa. Where do you think you're going? I said, well, mate, I've just been offered a really big deal at Rugby Lions, $10,000 a year. They've offered me a Ford Escort and a flat. He's like, you ain't fucking going anywhere. He's like, you're staying at Leicester. We're going to do you a new deal. It's going to be a big deal, and you've earned it. I was like, all right, what is it? So I got offered $7,500 a year and I stayed. In 2003, I got my opportunity. All the lads are away. You know, we were all competing. We were all vying for the top spot at Leicester. Martin Johnson, Ben Kay, Lewis Deacon at the time. But it was my time. And because of my leadership credentials for the A team, Dino's fast-tracked me into the first team. Basically, there was no one left to play, so I played. Now, one of the first games was Leeds away, right? And because I was known as a bit of an enforcer, as we know, self-proclaimed, Dino's like, mate, I want you physical in this game. I don't want anything else. I don't want you offloading and doing all the things that you always normally do. I want you being physical, right? It's like, Dino, got you. He said, the first time someone's over the ball, you give them a proper shoeing, right? I was like, Dino, amen to that. Carl Hogg, who then went on to be my Gloucester coach, is over ball wearing number 7. I've gone two-footed into the breakdown in McGilbert's. I had a deal off Gilbert, actually. They paid me £500 a year. So I've gone double-footed into this breakdown. I've clipped him, Carl Hogg, in the head. Dave Pearce is referee at the time. No bones about it. Then Hoggy, as I'm speaking to Dave Pearce, goes on the floor like someone screamed grenade. Next thing, Dave Pearce has sent me off. So I've got a red card in one of my first games for Leicester. We lost, but I've just been sent off playing for Leicester. I've got my Gilbert boots on. I thought I was hard as nails. So disciplinary comes round. I get sent off by Dave Pearce. Disciplinary comes round quite quick. Now, I wasn't the best dressed at that point. Didn't have much money. But I had these shoes that I bought from High and Mighty. It was called Fat and Skinny, this shop called Fat and Skinny. And they were size 15 and they were leather soled. And they were like snakeskin at the top, like these snakeskin style shoes. That they're the only shoes that I had. So I've rocked up in my Leicester suit with my snakeskin shoes on. And I'm going down to Twickenham for the disciplinary with Dino. I get out of the car. It's like a scene out of a cowboy movie. Get my feet out. Dino looks at me and he said, are you taking the fucking piss? And I'm looking at him, Dino, like, what are you on about, mate? He says, are you taking the piss? I'm like, Dino, what are you on about? He's like, are you taking the fucking piss out of me? In the car park in front of everyone. I'm thinking, mate, I can't afford, I've got a Vauxhall Astra. Mate, I can't afford anything. I had no idea what he was talking about. So I'm like, what's the problem here? He said, sit on your ass now. And I'm like, what are you on about? He said, sit on the floor. I'm like, Dino, what are you going to... So when Dino tells you to do something, once you normally do it, the third time I've done it, I've sat on the floor. Next thing, I've rolled back into like a, you know, like you do the turtle roll. And I've put my feet in the air and he's ripped off my shoes and flung them over the wall. He said, you're taking the fucking piss. What the fuck? And he's going ballistic. I'm like, Dino, I'm sorry. They're the only shoes I've got. And I had to go down to Twickenham in his car. Let's say it was a Range Rover. In my suit. Didn't say a word to me. In my socks. I've had to walk into the disciplinary in just my socks. They're piss wet through. And I got an eight-week ban. I got a 12-week, but it got taken down to 8 because I didn't have my shoes on. So they felt sorry for me.
The mitigating circumstances were, you've got no shoes, so we need to get you back on the field as quickly as possible. So we'll take 4 weeks off so you can earn some money to get some more shoes.
Exactly. So cheers for that, Dino.
Wise. Dino was wise.
He was, mate. He was. I did enjoy his company. So thanks for that, Dino. You made me the man that I am today. And now I'm wearing Daddy's walking boot and scooting.
He did the same for me, actually, making me the man I am as well today. And I go back to my Newcastle days with Dino. So obviously he signed me, and I don't like to talk about it, but I might have saved Newcastle from relegation. But the big thing was, you know, flying me up and back to Newcastle every day from Heathrow. And the way it worked was Newcastle did their rugby training in the morning. So I'd land at 8 o'clock in the morning, get 7 o'clock flight, land about 8, get to the training ground for about, once I cleared customs and everything, about 8:30. Training started at 9, so I meet him. And then we'd train, we'd have a team meeting at 9, train to go on in the morning, then there'd be lunch. And in the afternoons, it'd be S&C, so fitness or weights or top-up conditioning, all this stuff. And I said to Dino, I can either get a 2 o'clock flight home or a 4:30 flight home. If I promise to do some gym when I get home, can I get the 2 o'clock flight home? He just looks at me, he goes, Goody, I know every fucking excuse under the sun to not go to the gym the way I played. Look at me now. I said, yes, Dino. He says, if you're telling me that you're going to go home and go to the gym, you get on that 2 o'clock flight. But if you're fucking lying to me, you'll stay up here and you'll be doing it till 4:30. In fact, you'll be getting the 6:30 flight home because I'll make you do extra. I was like, Dino, give us a heart rate monitor. I'm telling you now, I'll go to the gym. And you can test it. I'll give it to the S&C staff. I'll go and do a bike session. Whatever you want me to do, you'll see it. First day I go back, take the heart rate monitor, strap it around the dog, take the dog for a walk. Off we go for about an hour walk, give it back to the S&C coach. He's like, how come your heart rate was so high? I'm like, yeah, I just thought I'd put it in because I want to get the 2 o'clock flight. Did it once, never did it again. Dino thought I was training every day of my life. And of course, I was getting the 2 o'clock flight home and I wasn't training and I've now put on about 5 stone. So I blame Dino.
And we can have a chat now with Premiership Rugby CEO Darren Childs now as we catch up on what the situation is with the league in general. How you going, mate?
I'm good. It's been a crazy couple of weeks, but it feels like we're getting to it all now.
Cheers for coming on, Darren. Mate, it's been a hell of a start. Hell of a first season for you. First, the Saracens scandal, if you want to call it that, but the Saracens salary debate is no longer a debate. And obviously now the coronavirus, which has caused massive problems, unprecedented. We've never seen it before. Now, I've seen your bio picture, and there ain't a lot of hair there. If there's any hair around the body, that's going to have gone now. The stress levels must be through the roof.
Thanks for pointing that one out. Any that I had is now severely gone. Look, it has been it's been a pretty landmark season, hasn't it? You're right. We, you know, Saracens, first of all. And thank you guys for doing such a great job of covering that. But that has all paled into insignificance in comparison to what we're dealing with right now, which is a massive crisis, not just for us, but for all business around the world. And we're working hard trying to make sense of it all. I'm working hard trying to find a way to play, I think, and that's the thing that's keeping us going every day is, you know, how do we find a way to play as quickly as possible and, you know, and when it's safe to do so.
And just looking at that, obviously everyone knows the league has been suspended for 5 weeks, but, you know, clearly hearing in your voice there and what you're saying and knowing people at Premiership Rugby and across the Premiership clubs, we're all trying to find ways of being able to finish the season and get back to some sort of normality. How hard is it for you, though, when there is so much up in the air? Boris is making statements nightly that changes the picture. It must be really hard as a business, right?
Yeah, it's really hard. But again, keeping it in perspective in comparison to what some people are going through in terms of dealing with this virus, you know, these are much less significant matters. But so, you know, what we're doing right now is we're just looking at all the different scenarios of how we can find a way to play. So we know from conversations with the GORs and the players, they want to play. We know from conversations with the fans, They want us to get the show back on the road. It's just not safe to do that right now. So when it is, then, you know, certainly everyone here at Premiership Rugby is working, you know, working hard to try and see if we can be the first sport that's back on TV. And that means we've got to look at a whole bunch of options, including, you know, big weekends, you know, multiple games stacked over weekends, midweek games, you know, how we deal with all that. And then we've got all the whole context of player welfare to deal with to make sure that that's fine. But look, if we can get this game going again, it's inevitable it's going to be, it's going to require us to play some games over the summer. And that may mean that there's not a big gap between when we finish the season and when we start the next one. But it certainly would be, that would be a better outcome than not finishing this season at all. So look, we're working flat out to get this game up and running again.
And fingers crossed that happens as well. And yeah, I think, like you said, there's obviously bigger things going on outside the world of rugby, but I think we should touch on, because it has been making the news and, you know, the finances around players and clubs. What's your take on all that? Because we've been just been chatting on the podcast. We know that Gloucester and Leicester, and I'm sure there's other clubs that have deducted their players 25%, but how sustainable is it for other clubs that maybe don't have the financial backing of Nigel Ray and Bristol and with Lansdowne there? Is there any talks around that and potentially how that can be bridged?
Look, every club and every squad in the Premiership have united around the understanding that we need to make some cuts to our cost base. I've done it. I've taken a pay cut. My senior team have taken a pay cut. We're all in this together because we want to do one thing, which is survive this ban on live sport and this ban on getting crowds together and survive it in the best financial state that we can. Again, just so we can get the game playing again. But look, it's tough. I've got to say, it's tough. For the clubs, they've lost match day revenue, which is a big chunk of their revenue and a huge amount of sort of sympathy from our perspective to them, because they're dealing with this. They're dealing with this in on a local basis. But we're doing all we can to help and making some good progress in that area as well. So we're in it together, and there's a real sense of unity and solidarity across all the clubs. And I think, you know, the great thing about rugby is probably the reason we're all in it, is because we all love the values of rugby. And this is when, in moments of crisis, is when values get tested, and ours are being tested right now. And I'm very pleased with the way that everyone's responding to this. Everyone's doing their bit in order to protect the game and, again, get us playing as soon as we can.
One of the questions I wanted to ask, you mentioned values then, and we know CVC have bought a stake in Premiership Rugby. Are they actively involved in conversations at the minute, and is the talk of them perhaps buying a bigger stake, if that would financially help out some of the clubs as well?
Look, I think that's speculation. There's a lot of speculation going around at the minute. There was a lot of speculation over the weekend. I read quite a lot of it myself, but look, CVC is an important shareholder in this business, and like all shareholders, they are leaning in, and as we go through all of these issues right now, to help us come out in the best possible way. But that's where it ends.
And as we move forward as well, I know the season's becoming more and more to an end in terms of where it would normally finish. So when's the next kind of meeting? I mean, because it looks like we're going to be on lockdown for the next 2 or 3 weeks, potentially longer. And then there's a whole talk of the players deconditioning. So when's the next rendezvous, I suppose, for Prem Rugby with the clubs and stuff to assess going forward in terms of dates, etc.?
Yeah, so look, it's on a daily review right now. So we are looking at all of those issues on a daily basis. And we're talking with all the clubs on a daily basis as we look at it and get feedback in terms of player welfare. And of course, you know, we are monitoring cases of self-isolation as well within the club system as well, to keep an eye on that. But so it's a daily review, but it's inevitable we'll probably be making some announcement, I would say, in the next 2.5 weeks about what happens post April 20th.
And obviously with that, you mentioned games perhaps being played in midweek, and you talk about maybe having some big weekends where a load of games go on. Obviously, player welfare is a big issue, isn't it? And it's something that's at the forefront of everyone's minds as well. How much of an impact is what Jim mentioned there about the deconditioning and the player welfare and that aspect of it going to have an implication on when we can get back to normal?
Yeah, look, those are, again, very active conversations. You know, so all the players now are on a 3-week rest, and in order for them to come back in, if there's a chance that we can play at the end of April, everyone knows when they need to come back in and when they need to start training and getting ready for that. But again, that may move and change as the information that we get from government, from all of our other data sources about how long this is going to go on for. As that comes in, we're going to make those decisions. But it's absolutely critical that we make sure that the players have got plenty of time to get back into top position.
Let's go back then, obviously, talk about the Saracens saga. I know it feels like a long time ago now. Obviously, we've seen changes that have been made and people are now talking about, you know, that there was something on Rugby Pass that they may not get relegated. Is that set in stone now, that they will be relegated, even if there are huge changes around the club game with coronavirus?
It is set in stone that Saracens will be relegated at the end of the season.
As Jim said earlier, it's been a monumental first season in charge for you for different reasons. But I know you're dealing with your predecessor as well at CVC, Mark McCafferty as well. How's that relationship going, sort of poacher-turned-gamekeeper from his side?
I don't know. You need to talk to Mark. And, you know, I think he's busy bobbing around the world doing other bits and pieces. But I don't know what he's up to on a day-to-day basis.
So finally as well, Darren, any chats with people like BT Sport and obviously the kind of effect and also the, you know, the vulgarities of it, the finance and stuff that's involved. And, you know, we were questioning whether the cuts for the teams that are inevitably coming that have already came already, you know, might result more when BT Sport no longer put the finance in because they're not showing the games and they're obviously a subscription-based platform. So is there any ongoing discussions with them?
Yeah, look, BT Sport are being actually fantastic partners to us on this, and they're literally our daily calls with them about how we can keep rugby fans entertained. So there's a ton of stuff that's been going on around the Rugby Tonight show. We're looking at opening up archives of some games that have not been seen on BT before, and we're spending a lot of time talking to them about, again, getting us back to playing as quickly as possible and how logistically we would do that and how we would truck roll so that we could actually film these games and get them into people's homes. And you can imagine that requires a lot of work. So that's what we're spending our time in, and that's the important stuff because that's our focus.
Oh, just one request then. If you are speaking to BT Sport and they want to bring some games out from the archive, 2016 end of season relegation battle, just bring them out. Newcastle, Andy Goo playing fly half, 10 stone overweight.
Someone should find a way of doing some different commentaries to some of those old games, because I think that'd be quite interesting. Maybe something for you guys to think about.
Yeah, it would be fun, actually. It would be fun. Well, thanks very much for your time, Darren. Really appreciate you coming on and being so open.
Take care, guys.
Thanks, Darren.
Bye-bye.
Good bloke.
Great bloke, yeah. I mean, CEO of Premiership Rugby coming onto our podcast to talk about it at this unprecedented time. Really appreciate it. What a good bloke. What a good man Darren Childs is.
In Scotland and Wales rugby unions, they've both come out and offering financial help, but we haven't heard anything, have we, from the RFU? Are you surprised by that?
No, I think that they're addressing the situation. I think they're looking at it in terms of longevity. The RFU have been very flush for money in years gone by, but they're now a union, I think I'm right in saying, that are struggling a bit for money. There's a load of issues, you know, around their hospitality setup, around their, you know, the tickets. Now they're going to be hit hard. So I don't think they can come out. Scotland Rugby Union came out and offered £500,000, which is great, which is lovely of them. And I'm sure that will go some way to the deficit that it's caused. And, you know, whether or not it scratches the surface, we'll see. So I'm sure the RFU will come out. I don't know. These are all questions that, you know, people are going to be asking, I reckon, in the coming weeks, Andy Rowe. But it's a good question to ask. But I'm just sad. I'm sad that it's not that it's over, because there's talks of it still happening. But
it ain't over.
I think this season's over. I don't know how, unless we can play a shortened number of games, I reckon, in the summer. I don't know how many games are left, including Europe and what they want to do around the Guinness Six Nations and stuff like that. But there's so many question marks, and they're doing everything they can to try and save the Gallagher Premiership. You can see that because they've canned every other game underneath it. You know, Scotland have done the same. And we obviously spoke to David Jordan last week about the Guinness Pro 14. And if there's any league, within Europe that's going to probably not play their games. It's them because of the travel aspects around it. So can we get to a stage where they play behind closed doors? You know, how conditioned are the guys going to be? I don't know at what point they make a decision to say, look, the season's done and we just have to look forward to next year. Hopefully they don't do that. And then if they don't do that, then we know that these teams are going to be having some kind of revenue, whether that be TV, whether they open the gates to the fans. And we know that it's just delayed to the summer, and we're going to see the conclusion of the Guinness Six Nations as well. That's what we all want. But we're all guessing now at the minute in terms of what the RFU are going to do. You know, what teams are going to struggle financially? RBT paying the money to the teams that they should be, even though that they're probably losing a load of subscriptions as well. So many questions. And believe it or not, even though I'm the Oracle, I ain't got the answers.
You haven't, Jim.
Mate, I can't even do the kids' homework. Now, they're doing something on fractions. I know half. That's it. 50-50.
What about what we did last week? 3/7.
Oh, my God. Chicago. Swear to God, I think people thought I was taking the piss.
That was the greatest thing I've ever seen.
No idea. Chicago. I mean, who's thinking that is in line with Chicago? Anyway, if you've not listened to it, go back, peel back.
Goody, you reckon that the Premiership's going to keep going, don't you? How does it look?
I mean, obviously, as we stand now, it doesn't look great. You know, we've seen the RFU have cancelled all the other leagues, and it's like the GCSEs and the A-levels, that no one's doing exams now, so they'll go into a kind of selection process of each individual, get a grade. So, you know, with the RFU, they're going to look form a panel that will discuss promotion and relegation and come out with what they think is a fair and reflecting answer on who gets promoted and who gets relegated from the various leagues. Now, the Premiership, I think they'll try and do all they can to restart it at some point. And as we said, you know, we've been chatting about this for a few weeks now. It's an ever-evolving story daily. You know, we've seen Italy go through an absolute horrendous time. They're in lockdown. The numbers have gone up. But today I'm reading that finally they've got control of the numbers that are dying from coronavirus. So there could be a corner being turned there. You know, where are we in the UK? Well, we're slightly behind Italy, of course. So we don't know. But there has to be things in place. Now, everyone's working from home. We're all working from home. Conversations are ongoing with every business. The Premiership Rugby is a business. They'll have contingency plans if it ends and we can get back to normality in April, in May, in June. And there'll be a cut-off point where we say, listen, we have to just knock it on the head and say the season's over. And then you have to debate who's the top six, who goes into the Champions Cup next year. These are all conversations that are going to evolve over the next few weeks. But I'm a big believer in positivity and the hope that we can get through this. And at the minute, Premiership Rugby don't feel the need to cancel the rest of the season. I can see Jim's point of view that it's going to be very difficult to see how we can get everything finished. We spoke about it last week on the pod. Summer tours are going to have to be canned to open up some space, and perhaps a delay of the season next year and cancelling the Premiership Cup is an option, an idea. And these will all be floated amongst the CEOs, the owners and Premiership Rugby, and I know they're ongoing conversations at the minute.
Well, we've spoken a lot about some serious subjects throughout the podcast so far, but let's just lighten it up a little bit. Jim, how's the feedback been since last week's episode of Jim Will Solve It? I mean, you've gone viral, as you'd say.
Well, it seems to have gone viral, and this is my new segment, Jim Will Solve It. Riddle me this, riddle me that. Jim will solve it. If not, peel back. Yeah, no, it's fine, back. Don't worry. Yeah, peel back. It's code. It's code. Anyway, I know I'm 37. Yeah, it's fine. 37 and talking about peelbacks. The kids are learning anyway. They're learning early. So last week's went well. Did not get it, but it went well. It was received well. It got some laughs. Not that it was meant to, because I'm meant to solve it. So I get a riddle every week, and it's called Jim Will Solve It. I've only solved one of them, and hopefully I'm feeling better. I'm not going to Google. I don't do that. I don't cheat. Cheating's not good. Cheating's eating. Goody. So hit me, Andy Rowe, hit me. Chick woo woo woo.
Just before we start on that, last week's one, I mean, you've glazed over it there, Jim. Chicago has gone down an absolute storm, hasn't it? People are crying, sending videos of them laughing, watching it. There was a bloke walking his dog last night saying it's the greatest bit of podcastery he's ever heard. It was honestly, and I've watched it back about 10 times, and it makes me laugh. So anyone that hasn't seen it, get onto the YouTube channel, the Rugby Pod channel, listen to it. Chicago is the funniest thing, I think, that's ever come out of your mouth, Jim Hamilton.
I can't work it out. I still don't know how Andy Good on that sofa you have got that. It blows my mind.
Fractions, Jim. Mrs. Good was a great teacher.
All right, Jim, no fractions for you this week. What can you hold in your left hand but not your right?
What can you hold in your left hand and not in your right hand?
What can you hold in your left hand but not your right?
Left hand, right hand. What can you hold in your left hand but you can't hold in your right hand?
I said, keep repeating it, Jim. Keep repeating it. Keep thinking about it. I can hear the brain ticking over slowly.
Your left hand?
What can you hold in your left hand and not in your right?
What can you hold in your left hand but not in your right hand? Your right hand?
Yes.
No. And it's good. It's nearly there.
What can
it's
you hold in there. Your left hand? So what can you hold in your left hand and not in your right hand? So in your left hand...
You can't really hold your left hand in your left hand because it is your left hand. But you've got to think of something that you could physically hold in your left hand, but you can't hold it in your right.
So it must be something on you because you could hold anything else on your left.
Yep, you're close, Jim. You're close.
I definitely can't touch my ankles. Is it me or is it the general population?
It's everyone. It's everyone, Jim. You can't do this. Even though you're a Scottish legend, you can't do this. The average person on the street cannot do this either.
With my left hand, I can't touch my knees. I can't touch my toes. I can't touch my bum. I can touch the tops of my leg. Can I touch my head, shoulders, knees and toes, knees and toes? Elbow.
Bang. He's boom. Got it. Jim will solve it. Riddle me this, riddle me that. Jim has solved it.
So there's no need for a peel back. All right, back.
Right, shall we have a look at the rumour mill? Have you guys got any rumours floating around at the moment?
Oh, God. God, let's.
There is a few. A big one breaking. Another one out of Saracens. We've spoken about him a few times. Good mate of mine, Alex Lazowski.
He's getting bandied about. Where should we get him to go to?
Well, I spoke to him. Do you remember we did the Wasps v Saracens game in the Andy Good Suite, Jim? Do you remember he was there?
Yes, I do.
He was there with his dad, Rob, who was a Wasps legend from back in the day.
Yeah, good bloke.
I had a little word with him. I've kept this one quiet. It's only breaking now because I said I wouldn't stick it out there. But there's rumours of him going to Toulouse in France.
To Toulouse? I thought you were going to say he was going to go to Wasps. I thought that's why you were saying that then. You were building up the story, the narrative.
Well, yeah, just changed the narrative, isn't it? So he was at Wasps. We had a chat. And there was rumours of him going to Bath or Sale or a couple of other places. But yeah, there's a pretty hefty rumour that he's going to Toulouse next year.
Oh, really? Good on him. What else have we got? Johnny May. We tried to get Johnny May on the podcast. He's not keen to come on this week, but we'll get him on soon.
Is he going to a chicken farm?
Well, in Sale, I think they've got a few chicken farms because that's where he seems to be migrating to. Do chickens migrate or not?
No, Jim. No, they do not migrate.
How do you know?
Chickens just live. They just live on a chicken farm or, you know, on any farm. It doesn't have to be a chicken farm. It can be a farm.
I wonder what a coming together of chickens is then. Anyway, Johnny May to Sale. Yeah. Interesting that, isn't it? I can't work out his Leicester time, how it's going to be received. The whole way that the move was done, and he's been away with England a lot. And there's no doubt when he plays for Leicester, he always scores and does well. But I don't know, the whole way that the Gloucester thing worked out and the fact that they haven't done that well since he's been there, it's nothing to do with him. They've obviously signed the Dolo, and Sale seemed to have a lot of money. And now Ashy's gone because he told Steve Diamond he didn't like the way they were playing, even though they're now in the top four. Anyway, strange.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think Leicester have offered him a bit of a pay cut, which they have. You know, we spoke about Ben Youngs taking a bit of a pay cut to stay at Leicester. And I think it's right. We spoke about it earlier, didn't we, about the fact that clubs have overspent from what they can actually afford relative to their revenues. And wages have been the big upturn, really, in expenditure. So clubs are trying to actually comply with the salary cap and get that in order. And I think the market has gone through the roof for the good of the players in the short term, but for the bad of the game in the long term. And I think Leicester have said to him, look, you know, you're on X now. And the rumour that I've heard is he's been offered 100 grand less than what he's on at Leicester, so he's going out into the market and trying to push himself around to try and get anywhere near a figure that he's on at the minute, which, yeah, that's always a hard thing, isn't it? You go back to your time with all your different clubs, Jim, and I look at it when I played, your contracts, you go up, and then you kind of hit your big contract, and then you're just trying to stay on to as close to that for as long as possible into, you know, your 30s and whatever. And, for a player to be offered 100 grand less to stay at a club, sometimes they want to leave because they think that their value, the club don't rate them, and they can get a bit more elsewhere. And I think that's where we're at with Johnny May. He's a wonderful player. His record for England is phenomenal. You know, I don't think I can't remember Eddie Jones ever dropping him over the last 2-3 years. I think he's been outstanding for that. But have Leicester seen the full value? And that's the hard thing by being an England player now, and where Jim talks about central contracts just around that long corner, Jim. Who knows what's going to happen? And I think that's why Johnny May's been banded around everywhere.
Any other rumours floating around?
Well, there was a big one that I did see, and I would love to see. Past his best, but being past his best, he'll still be very good. Sergio Parise to London Irish. Imagine that. VIP mon ami. Yeah, he'd be class. So Sergio Parise, would love to see him. He's obviously at Toulon now. Will we get to see his swan song for Italy? I hope so, because we're halfway through filming a documentary on it at Rugby Pass. So it'd be nice to finish that, to show that. But yeah, I love Sergio Parise. You know, the Prem, he obviously hasn't played in the Prem before, but he is a world star. Is he past his best? Yes, of course. Can he still add value? 100%. Now, London Irish, we know, have got a big checkbook. And, well, who knows? We'll see how the season unfolds. And if it's finished, he might have a few more games left in those VIP legs.
Well, should we have a look at some social media questions now?
Oh, yeah, let's, Andy.
All right. Well, before we get into a few of the questions, we just need an open side and a coach and a referee to finish off the Fit 15. Who have you guys got there?
You can't go all class in the back row, can you? Now, I've done that. I've added a bit of star quality with Bobby Skinstad. I've gone for a bit of ruggedness with Sebastian Chabam and a bit of profile as well. And, you know, if we needed to eat, then he'd go out there and cook it because he's a caveman. But you've got to go for someone that's going to deliver week in, week out. CAK47. It's Luke Abraham.
Without a shadow of a doubt, it has to be.
With a body like
that. I was hoping you were going to go for that one, Jim.
Yeah, so it could be controversial amongst the ranks because he is an alpha. Him and Chabal might clash. They might do. But it'd be a good clash.
I've got a feeling they play together at Lyon.
Yeah, they might well have done. So, but you can't leave him out. The AK-47, you cannot leave him out.
Goody, do you want to name a coach?
Yeah, I do actually. You look round and coaches, they're not the best looking, are they? You know, they're stressed, their hair falls out, they put a bit of weight on. Actually, it sounds a bit like myself, but no, my hair didn't fall out because I use suns. But a coach that I've always looked at since he's burst onto the scene, quite a young coach, but since he's burst onto the scene, he's always got a tan. My coach would be Franco Smith. Happy with that, Jim?
Mate, I'll take it, mate.
It wouldn't be Dino.
Mate, Dino, that's what I mean. I was about to say, Dino definitely would not be in there. Absolutely not.
And finally, have you guys got a referee that you've got a crush on? A good-looking referee that you might want to chuck in there into the mix?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Ben O'Keefe, me old teeth. Love him.
Luke Pearce is another one.
Yeah, yeah, he's a fitty as well. Poor Barnsley, he ain't.
Wayne Barnes definitely ain't in.
Good ref, mate. You can't have them all. I can't think.
Frank Murphy?
No, I wouldn't put him in, mate. I don't like his legs.
No, you're not having it? No.
No.
All right, let's get into the first question. At number on a list has tweeted, could bringing back raking solve all the ills of the modern game?
At number on a list, he won't give his name because he's old school. That's why he wants a bit of old school slippering back. I used to love it. I used to love getting shooed. Absolutely love it. I don't know what it was. It was therapeutic. Flaplagic. What's that word again, Goody? Flaplagic? Is that a word?
No, it's not a word, Jim.
Okay, well,
therapeutic is.
I'll take that one, mate. Well, for me, it was flaplatic anyway, getting a good old slipper. And I used to enjoy handing one out in the mall. Even if they didn't touch your legs, they'd be getting a good old slipper on the way through.
How'd you shoe someone in the mall if they're just touching your legs?
Mate, you don't touch the Gilberts, mate. You don't touch Gilbert unless you're buying them and then you put in your code at Big Jim 5% off.
You got a deal there, have you?
Exactly. Jim? I had a deal. I don't think I've got one now because I'm talking about slippering people, shoeing them. No, you can't bring it back. I would like to see a little bit of it. Of course, a bit of old school, but you can't. You've got to keep your boots to yourself. You know, and they changed it. One of the things I did like was we used to counter up to the cow shed to come home and literally fly in with your arms down by your side, and you used to be able to toe-poke the ball. So I remember playing against Worcester and Marrow has come through and toe-poked the ball. And obviously it's not shooing someone, but Nick Schoenart, he's sliced his face right down the side. One of the worst cuts I've ever seen. And that was as close to slippering as you got in my day. Not what Marrow did, but being able to kick the ball out of rucks. And they've obviously changed that now where you can only backheel it. So blame Marrow, mate.
Rightly so. That law of being able to boot the ball out of a ruck is gone. That was ridiculous. It just ruined the game.
Oh, definitely.
You can't shoot people. You just need refs to ref the contact area. You know, you see players just lying in there for that extra second too long. Just ping them. A ref needs to be confident and perhaps... This is the reason we need another card away from a yellow card, where it's something that you can just get rid of a player for 10 minutes, but it's not going to be a yellow card where you get, if you get another yellow card, you're sent off, whereby it's a team offence and that team gets affected pretty badly for 10 minutes because the man down and it clears the ruck up. You want fast ball. You don't want any noises around the breakdown, just cheating, slowing it down, putting a hand in there wherever to slow it up. And that's the way to get fast ball. Otherwise, defences are going to continue to be on top, and because there's no Jim Hamilton size 16 Gilberts floating around the game anymore, boys will happily lie in the way if a referee isn't going to ping it.
Rob Griffiths has tweeted in, were there any clubs you both nearly signed for but you couldn't get the deal across the line?
Oh, Rob, interestingly. I mean, I changed my mind on a lot of things. It's not a great trait. But I nearly signed for Stade Francais before I went to Gloucester. Now, I was at Edinburgh at the time, hashtag always, but it weren't hashtag always then. It was hashtag always on its knees. They weren't great back then. They had a lot going on when they were owned by a different consortium, and then it was changed over to the SRU. And there was a big turnover of coaches. Anyway, I nearly signed for Stade Francais. Simon Taylor was there at the time. And I was going to take his apartment. I went round Max's house, the owner, and he lived next door to Lenny Kravitz, which I thought was a bit random. But when I suppose you're in them circles like Max was, then it maybe wasn't. So anyway, turned up to Max's house to sign the contract, and I was sat there on his sofa. He had all these statues around his house, and he offered me a drink, Sebon. And then I sat there with a sparkling water, looking at all these statues, and he's just walking around me, like touching me, like, oh, c'est grand mec. Like, he's touching me, he's like just feeling that bit. And I was a lot bigger back then, as you can imagine.
Did he say, grow?
What does that mean?
Oh, fat.
Oh.
He used to be very fat, didn't he, Jim?
I thought he meant gross. No, grand. I mean, he might have been saying gross, I don't even know what he was saying. And I got up and I walked out and thought, that was one of the weird experiences of my life. I've just seen Lenny Kravitz in the hallway. I'm in an apartment with statues, and I've had the owner... he looked quite good for his age, actually, touching me on the way through. But I only changed my mind because then we found out that Beck was pregnant with JJ. So I was like, hang on, can we go live in an apartment in Paris with a kid? Can't speak a word of the language. And I think, luckily, I didn't. I don't know if they folded that year. They went through some problems. But anyway, went to Gloucester, and hey, the rest is history. Captain. Pipe down, pipe down! Oh, mate, that's nothing. I think Beck has literally got them in the upstairs toilet trying to keep them quiet.
Goody, any clubs, mate, that you almost signed for but you didn't quite get it over the line?
Yeah, there's a couple, actually, and they both involved Leicester. So, firstly, when I was at Leicester, nearly left to sign for Clermont Auvergne. Stephen Jones was playing there at the time. He was moving back to Wales. I'd played... reasonably well for Leicester against Clermont a couple of times. So they were trying to sign me, offer me some reasonably big money. And it came down to a game of chicken, really, with Leicester. Leicester said, this is our final offer, take it or leave it. If you don't sign it by Monday evening at 7 p.m, then it's off the table and we'll sign someone else. And I said to them, yeah, listen, no problem. I said, if you don't offer me this number by 7 p.m, I'll be signing for Clermont.
Oh...
And it was, and that's negotiation, isn't it? So with my agent, I went into training on the Monday, knew the deadline was 7 p.m. on the Monday night. I've walked past Simon Cohen's office a couple of times to see if he called me in and said, here, mate, just sign this contract. Here's what you want. And he didn't. So I left the training ground, phoned my agent. I said, I've heard nothing. Looks like I'm going to have to sign for Clermont, and which I was okay at doing at the time. It was a good deal. It was way more money than actually Leicester were offering me. But I wasn't 100% convinced that it was the right time for me to go to France. And off the back of it, I get a phone call at 6:50. Simon Cohen phones me up. He's like, where are you? I said, I'm just going to a hotel. I'm just on my way to a hotel to do a video call and sign the contract with Clermont. He's like, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll offer you what you want. So he let it go to 6:50 at night, and I obviously lied to him. I wasn't. I was sat in my pyjamas, eating chocolate in the house, waiting for his call. So I didn't go to Clermont. They signed Brock James in the end instead of me, which was obviously a huge success for them, and they were glad they never had me, I think.
And Matt Edwards has tweeted in. He wants to know if you and Jim can both get mullets, please.
Yeah, we've seen over the last few days my mullet has resurfaced. It was called a skullet, actually. Has resurfaced from the archives when I skinned Jim Hamilton for Worcester Warriors against Gloucester. No, I've had a trim. I've had my final trim before the coronavirus has kicked into lockdown. So there's no mullet coming back, I'm afraid. Jim, can you grow one?
You're pretty thin on top,
aren't you?
If Suns kicks in, I will, yeah. No doubt about it. But not yet. I don't feel as if I have the profile yet to be able to deliver a mullet as much as I'd like to.
Right, well, let's finish things off with the good, the bad, and the ugly, which is brought to you by Suns again this week, isn't it, Goody?
Yeah, we're not in the same room, but just angle your camera towards the top of your head, Jim. I can see it. I think that Suns routine is working well.
That's the vitamins that I've not got on me in the store cupboard right now. Actually, they should live in the store cupboard, I'll be honest, but they don't. I'm not too sure with the stress that's gone by. Sons, this is it for you. If I can get through now, this week, and nothing falls out, I am literally talking about, I'm going to get you tattooed on my back. I'll be honest.
Good stuff. Yeah, I've been using the shampoo, the tablets, the vitamins, and the topical solution every day, and my hair is feeling great.
Hair loss is an issue a lot of men don't talk about, but Suns are helping to change that and offering a solution. They have a range of pharmaceutically licensed and medically proven products for preventing hair loss. Their free online consultation with their specialist physicians takes less than 2 minutes, and delivery takes just a few days. They deliver results in 9 out of 10 men, and all for a reasonable monthly cost with no hidden costs or charges. So give baldness the boot and go to suns.co.uk and use the code RugbyPod10 to get your first month for just 10 quid. That's sons.co.uk and the code is RugbyPod10, so go and check them out.
Yeah, obviously not many bits of good news over this weekend as no rugby's really gone on, but we'll start with a couple of things. And of course, we always have to talk about one of my ex-clubs in the Good. I say it week in, week out. We're going to start off with Wasps. Of course we are. And their Make the Call hashtag, where the players have been calling vulnerable fans who are self-isolating and nominating one another to do the same. It was Wasps that started it. I know another load of clubs have followed suit there, but it's really good to see the players getting in touch with some of the vulnerable fans. We're all in this together, everyone. So good work from them with the Make the Call hashtag. But the Good this week goes to a man that we've spoken about on the pod before. He has made phenomenal progress from his injury. Worcester Warriors second row Michael Fatialofa has been able to walk unaided again after being paralysed from the neck down just 10 weeks ago. So it's an unbelievable recovery. You can see the videos all over social media, Twitter, Instagram, the lot. I've got hairs on the back of the neck standing up at the time talking about this. It's a phenomenal thing that Michael Fatialofa has done. The challenge to get back walking after being told he'd never walk again is phenomenal. So the rugby community supported him throughout all of that, and it's great to see, isn't it, Jim?
Yeah, real, mate, it was class. I was the same. In a week or 2 weeks of really bad news, it's great to see him back on his feet. So I think congratulations to him, his family, you know, his missus has, you know, stuck by him. I don't mean in terms of, you know, she was going to do anything but stand by him, but she's been literally by his side taking videos and, you know, also sharing them to the world, which I think is really important in order for us to see actually the strength of the guy and his character. So congratulations to him. I think everyone as well who's raised money, and the RPA as well, who've done a phenomenal job as they always do.
So Michael Fatialofa gets the Good. The bad, a couple of bits of bad actually. We'll start off in Japan, and Japan's top league are going to get a mention in the bad for being so slow to act to coronavirus, leaving a lot of players struggling to get back home to various countries and worrying about it. We saw Matt Gitto talking about it, wanting to get back to Australia to be with his family, as much as he loves ruggers and loves playing in the Japan's top league. As we know, there's lots of Australians, lots of Kiwis, lots of Pacific Islanders that play in the Japanese top league. So they're a bit slow to cancel the league this year. What else is bad? The RFU are going to get a mention for not announcing what's happening with promotion and relegation when they decided to call the season off, and also for only giving some clubs as little as 11 minutes notice that they were going to end the season. Pretty poor communication from them. But the bad this week, we spoke about it earlier, it's the noises coming out of Ealing Trailfinders. Jim calls them the Trail Blazers, talking about taking legal action against the RFU if they automatically promote Newcastle. A ridiculous thing to say, especially at this moment in time with what's going on in the world and Newcastle being 18 points clear and having played 15-1-15. Newcastle should be the team that comes up. And the ugly. Well, there's only one ugly thing that I could find, and it involves a Kiwi, Andy Rowe.
Oh, dear.
Former All Black Byron Kelleher arrested and facing charges of assault and willful damage, allegedly involving his fiance's ex-partner. So that's the ugly for this week. But a special ugly this week goes for anyone stockpiling food, toilet roll or anything else, and anyone not listening to the government's advice. Stay home, let the NHS, the amazing NHS, do their work, and then get to the shops and buy toilet roll, food, absolutely anything. If you're not one of those people and you're still going out and causing everyone trouble, you're putting people's lives at risk. So sort it out, do what the government say, stay home, and let's get through this coronavirus issue.
Thanks, Scooty. And you've got a shout out to finish off with, haven't you, Jim?
Yes, I have actually. I've got a big shout out to Will Rogers and all of his mates at Bridge North Rugby Club. Will suffered a serious head injury at work recently, and they're trying to raise £2,000 to help him cover the costs. So just check out justgiving.com/crowdfunding/Will Rogers. Yeah, so a big shout out to you, Will, and your mates at Bridge North Rugby Club.
And you've got one too, haven't you, Gertie?
Yeah, I have. Tom Head has contacted me and said he's setting up Quarantash. It's a fundraiser to help support the National Emergency Appeal Coronavirus Fund. It's basically a rip-off of Movember, but it's a great excuse to give people something else to talk about and raise money for a great reason that is impacting everyone. So if we can get a big shout-out to them, the actual page is justgiving.com/team/Quarantash2020. Area for that.
Thanks, Goody. Thanks, Jim. Thanks, producer Tim. And thank you very much for listening. We really appreciate everyone who subscribes, follows us on Twitter, and particularly those who leave us a nice review on iTunes. And don't forget, if you're in need of more great rugby content while you're stuck indoors, check out our Superfans monthly subscription service at patreon.com/therugbypod.
Stay safe, everyone. Rugby pod.
Stay safe. Pod, pod, pod.